Good morning. I'm Rachel Miro, and this is the California Report. Confusion and chaos reigned in the L.A. County Superior Courtroom, where the Bell corruption trial wrapped up yesterday. As one lawyer put it to the L.A. Times, the verdicts came out, and then it got weird. After less than half an hour of deliberations, the jury informed Judge Kathleen Kennedy they were hopelessly deadlocked on the charges they didn't decide on Wednesday. At least one juror asked to reconsider those, but Kennedy refused and declared a mistrial on the rest. Lots of people are predicting this case will have to be retried, but prosecutors are saying nothing. They're focused on the upcoming trial of Robert Rizzo, the alleged mastermind of the Bell corruption scandal. The oil industry is smacking its collective lips over the potential profits hydraulic fracturing could unleash from the Monterey Shale formation. But first, state regulators are drafting new regulations, and they're getting an earful from everybody: industry, environmental groups, and politicians. Several bills are circulating in Sacramento. Of course, the public also gets to weigh in, as the California Report's Sacramento Bureau Chief Scott Detrow reports.
The questions at the Sacramento workshop ranged from broad and emotional.
Excuse me, but
no, wait a minute. I want to know what your notification is going to be when there's going to be offshore oil and gas drilled.
To technical and specific.
So for Part C, the 24-hour, is that public notice or just dogger notice?
This is the third of five public hearings on the proposed fracking rules. The Department of Conservation is promising to listen to the input as it finalizes its language. Energy companies have been using fracking to extract California oil for decades, but drilling activity in the Monterey Formation would be on a much broader scale than the state has seen before. Shale wells can stretch miles underground and use millions of gallons of water. For the California Report, I'm Scott Detrow in Sacramento.
This week, we're taking a deep dive into the topic of immigration in Silicon Valley. Federal lawmakers are considering proposals to attract and retain highly skilled talent, either as part of a comprehensive immigration package or in standalone bills like the Immigration Innovation Act, a.k.a. I-squared. That measure would more than triple the number of H-1B visas issued to foreign workers. Big tech backs I-squared, but there are serious questions about the program, as Sam Harnett reports.
Kriti Bajaj thought she'd found her way. She studied biology, graduated from Stanford University, and then went home to India for a PhD. But after a year, she realized academia just wasn't for her.
There's too many unknowns. Nothing was working. I was in this like dark little cell in the middle of nowhere.
Now she's trying to restart her life as a computer programmer back in the Bay Area. That's why she got a tourist visa and came here to App Academy, an intensive 9-week coding camp that teaches web development from scratch.
Form, I log in, it sets some kind of cookie, then redirects me back to root. Any questions so far?
Bajaj hopes to graduate and get hired on an H-1B. That's the visa for high-skilled foreign workers. But she's fighting the clock. H-1Bs start getting allotted on April 1st. If she doesn't get a job offer before then, she'll have to wait another year to apply. That means back to India. Some say that if she does get an H-1B, she'll be robbing a job from an American.
If she's being hired for an H-1B visa based on 9 weeks of programming work, are you kidding me? Then it's an abuse of the visa.
Norm Matloff teaches computer science at the University of California, Davis. He says companies use H-1B visas to replace older U.S. programmers with younger, cheaper foreigners like Bajaj.
The central issue is wage and mobility.
Matloff argues that since employers sponsor H-1B visas, it's tricky for foreigners to negotiate higher salaries or switch jobs. They effectively get handcuffed to their employer at lower salaries. And that's why businesses want more H-1Bs, he says. But tech companies have a different story.
There aren't enough Americans that are educated to fill these jobs.
Dan Turrentine is a vice president for TechNet. The lobbying group got over 100 technology companies to sign a letter to President Obama and Congress, urging them to expand the H-1B program. Turrentine says the cap of 85,000 H-1Bs a year hasn't kept up with the demand for skilled tech workers.
That cap was set back in the 90s when the economy was much less dependent on technology.
Companies like Facebook, Google, and Hewlett-Packard all signed the letter. But the truth is, most H-1B holders aren't found at these companies, and they aren't at startups either. Nearly half work at places like Infosys and Wipro. These multinational IT workhorses churn out the unglamorous connective tissue of all modern business: the boilerplate coding, user support, and network maintenance. These kinds of companies bring workers to their U.S. offices on H-1Bs so that they can better interface between American businesses and their vast Indian workforces.
The abuse is widespread. It's across the board.
Melov says instead of increasing the number of visas, we should be reforming the program to prevent outsourcing and wage discrimination. Ardit Barakhtari, a 32-year-old from Albania, agrees. He calls the current system indentured servitude.
It's crazy, but I'm getting used to it, so it's nuts.
Barakhtari is a hotshot developer who specializes in software for mobile devices. Like many programmers in Silicon Valley, he's hopped around, working at places like Mobi TV, Yammer, and Amazon.
If you want to keep your skill set up to date, you have to sometimes move companies.
But every time Barakhtari switches jobs, he loses his H-1B visa sponsorship and risks deportation.
It's like you have a sword on your neck and you have to find a job.
Barakhtari has been trying to get permanent residency for a decade so that he has more job flexibility. But like all H-1B workers, Barakhtari depends on an employer to sponsor him for a green card. So every time he changes jobs, he has to restart the application process all over again. He says companies drag their feet to keep him from switching jobs. At Amazon, he claims it took them nearly 2 years to start moving on the paperwork. It was like being back in Albania under communism.
To make things move forward, you have to threaten your company that you're not going to work anymore. It becomes a weird, weird situation.
The I-squared bill in the Senate has some provisions to try and address the challenges of H-1B job mobility. It would give employees a 60-day grace period between positions, but employers would still control the green card process. Barakhtari says if the government really wants to stop companies from abusing H-1B visas, it should give workers some control over their green card applications.
The H-1B holder should be able to do the green card petition himself and not the company, so you're not the slave of your company.
Barakhtari has worked here for over a decade. He has dreams of founding his own company, but he says the first step is to get a green card. Only then will he have the same work freedoms as his U.S. colleagues. For the California Report, I'm Sam Harnett.
You can listen to Harnett's story again and check out the other story in this series online at californiareport.org. And that's the California Report for Friday, March 22nd, a production of KQED Public Radio. Our team includes Howard Gelman, Danny Bringer, Seal Muller, Paul Lancour, Sarah Bond, Vinnie Tong, Gina Shalaba, Guy Maserati, Dan Brecky, Julia McAvoy, Taiki Hendricks, Victoria Malion, Ingrid Becker, and Bruce Kuhn. I'm Rachel Myra. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the Wesley Foundation, improving the lives of California's children, and URS, a global engineering and construction firm working to improve California's public infrastructure, preserve the state's natural resources, and strengthen the environment. URS.com.